We have two scriptures, readings. And the first is from Jeremiah 33, verses 14 to 16. The days are surely coming, says the Lord, when I will fulfill the promise I made to the house of Israel and the house of Judah. In those days and at that time, I will cause a righteous branch to spring up for David. And he shall execute justice and righteousness in the land. In those days, Judah will be saved and Jerusalem will live in safety. And this is the name by which it will be called. The Lord is our righteousness. And from Psalm 25, verse 4 to 5, make me to know your ways, O Lord. Teach me your paths. Lead me in your truth and teach me, for you are the God of my salvation. For you I wait all day long. Holy wisdom, holy word, thanks be to God. And now we have the anthem, The Manger is Stranger.
The desert was a life before. much at home going to the barn this morning because as a boy, I would get up early in the morning and the cows needed to be milked and my chickens needed to be fed. And so I'm very familiar with barns. And when Paul Belanger asked me, can you make a barn door? Well, I scurried around a little bit and I found all the pieces that we needed. Yes, I can make a barn door. And I ask you this morning, are you comfortable here in the barn? I hope the ambiance fits you for this season. You can see that it's quite simple. There's nothing complicated about what we have here. Anybody who knows what a barn looks like would feel, yes, this is right there. Anybody who knows what a barn smells like, well, the straw is what makes that happen this morning. And do you know what a barn sounds like? A barn sounds like sound reverberating. I can remember as a kid because the barn owl was up there, way up there. And then a little higher, there were the doves that made their nest right at the peak of the barn. A barn is a secondary space. It's not the penthouse of Kahala Hilton. Just ask Mary and Joseph. A barn is a place that accepts you as you are and accommodates you for whatever need you might be bringing with you. And that's why it makes it so valuable for us to begin here on this first Sunday with hope in mind. Over there you see an old chest. That really is old, that's 100 years old. And my mother had it, and then one of our sons used it because it's still strong and holding together. As he made his journey from Thailand in the Peace Corps back to the United States, you're going to have to get used to something changing there every Sunday. Next Sunday, we will go from today, the emphasis on hope, and we will be there with peace, and then joy, and then love. But we have to begin in this ambience this morning as we think about love, as we think about hope, because there is so much to be said. I will always remember, for example, the intense planning in anticipation of our first child. But when Eric arrived 57 years ago, in spite of our meticulous care, I was 200 miles away from his arrival. As a graduate student on the campus of Indiana University, I hoped that he would wait until my summer semester was over. On plan, my mother drove from her home in Ohio to pick up my very pregnant wife a week before the delivery. On plan, I was in the library preparing for my finals. But then the dormitory phone rang with the news, unplanned, that Eric had arrived. Helen from Brazil took that call and excitedly came rushing into the library, eager to share the glad news. dashing in and without restraint. At the top of her lungs, she announced the birth. "Paul, it's a boy!" And that very proper and quiet space was quickly transformed into a spontaneous celebration. And those 20 or so students who were in there with me, they clapped, they watched to see what I was going to do in response. They cheered me as I gathered my books and hastily made my exit. And then, getting approval from all of my professors, I packed up in record time and soon found myself traveling that four-hour trip to where my wife and my son were waiting for me. I think you can identify with that, because everyone who has experienced an addition in their family knows that there is nothing quite as intense, quite as intrusive as the birth of a child. Its energy and power know no limits. And I think it was the same way with Joseph and Mary as they made their journey that first Christmas. You see, even the divine cannot arrange for perfect schedules and accommodation. There was no room for them in the inn. And when the baby was coming, neither heaven nor earth could hold him back. In the Advent season every year, we as Christians retell that very memorable story, always remembering, emphasizing those core themes of hope and peace and joy and love. To tell the narrative to someone unfamiliar with that is a challenge. But I remember what it was like when I was trying to do that. It happened in our home, and we had just had two new foster children coming to live with us, watching me with great interest as I set up that creche I never will forget. I was asking them as I placed each animal down in the creche, "What is this? A donkey? A camel?" Those were no problems. But when I put that little silhouette of a sheep down, our bright young teenager, born into a Chinese home, hesitated. And finally, he had the answer: skunk! You see, neither sheep nor skunks were familiar to him, and the story of the first Christmas likewise was not familiar to him. And those qualities that we take for granted, they were quite foreign. Every year, without thinking, we deck the halls, we carol, we send our greetings, we light our candles, we prepare our delicacies, we wrap our gifts with such regularity and unthinking acceptance that we may take them for granted. Are we motivated by religious belief or cultural tradition? Can we think through what it is that we are actually doing? So in this first Sunday of Advent, what is the hope we aspire to keep alive? Such a glib word, such a slippery four-letter concept that serves no less than the foundation for all else that this season offers: hope. I hope it doesn't rain. I hope our team wins. I hope to see you again. In days gone by, we might have put our hopes in chess, like I know some young women did, that when they would be married, they would be able to set up housekeeping quickly because the dishes and the cutlery and grandma's quilt was right there in that chest. And so they could begin. Hope. Does it mean anything to you this morning? I've been reflecting on it for myself. I've been reflecting on what it means within the New Testament. You see, in the New Testament, it appears some 85 times, mostly in theological contexts. And God is the author of that hope and the source of that hope. It is grounded in God. So the reason to trust and rise up in response, to show eagerness, patient endurance, joyful assurance, hope is from God. It is a gift. It is the power of this life that I am privileged to be able to live. And so in practical terms this morning, I ask us, who taught you to hope? None of us invented it, but probably each one of us borrowed it from somebody. And what a gift it is as we reflect on what it means to us. In my case, for example, I was fortunate to be able to learn hope as a child. And by the time I was 7, my mother took me aside to explain that our family was struggling to be able to meet our payments. And she, as a single parent working 2 jobs, could not keep up with all the costs to feed, house, and care for us 3 kids and herself. My father, challenged as he was all of his life by alcoholism and unemployment, could not be relied on to be a breadwinner that he was expected to be. So my mother's plan was simple, but it was hopeful. And it was based on reality. And I share it with you. She asked me, "Can you be a newspaper boy?" And then she said, "If you can do that, I think that we can make enough money so that you, from your earnings, can provide underwear for your sister, your brother, and yourself." Quite an elevated kind of thought. I had no bicycle. My route, she said, could be small and even walkable from our house. And she promised to help me during those heavy snowfalls of Ohio, our freezing temperatures. So I became a newspaper boy. And every morning before school started, I rose to the occasion because I recognized I had an important role. And it wasn't just about long underwear. For 9 years, I peddled papers. And then I landed other jobs, which brought in more income. And when our mother later bought a house for the grand total of $9,000. My brother, also a paper boy, and I pooled our resources, and we came up with $1,000 for the down payment. Talk about hope. It was neither abstract nor out of reach. We had no time for self-pity. It brought us into contact with our community. It taught us many lessons. It deepened our faith. It showed us that austerity could be the best teacher of all. The love and respect we had for our mother was, of course, beyond words. The devotion we nurtured toward the church never ceased. And now that we are as siblings in that family, we three octogenarians, we are not cynical, we are not angry, we are not resentful. There's a healthy hope with our future, because its past was practical, realistic, inviting, and inspired at every juncture by trusting God. Again, I ask you this morning, where did you get your hope? You probably, like I, borrowed it from somebody and then gave it a character all of its own. And in the nitty-gritty of life, we have found out that we have to make decisions. Just ask Mary and Joseph about that. Her pregnancy could not be put on pause, and then later at a convenient time be addressed. It had to be done now. Nor could my mother brush aside the warmth of her children. Immediate needs deserve immediate answers. And the true antidote to fear is hope. It's not optimism. And that hope is rooted in the conviction that human beings can be problem solvers. A stable is a warm enough place for birth to take place. Long underwear is what Midwestern kids need when icy winds blow. Hope comes from seeing your leader, yes, your parent, lead in a way that brings out the best in people, by inspiring collaboration, common purpose, and future possibilities. How does that happen? Optimism says somehow things will get better. Hope for us who follow Jesus says things are better. God is on our side. The anchor to our hope is God pitching his tent among us, welcoming all to participate in the renewal of life that Jesus offers. The indwelling, living Christ in us, the hope of our glory. So today we celebrate that new life is always conceived in hope. And at the center of creation is an inherent and deep recognition whether expressed or not expressed, that hope exists. No TV coverage was present 2,000 years ago to proclaim the historic event that was taking place. And only a few recognized the shepherds, Mary and Joseph, angels. And today around the world, we will sing those carols in many languages that hope was born. In many corners, that birth remains small and insignificant, crowded out by distracting messages. Consumerism, materialism, greed, untruth, all the more reason to broadcast the glad tidings that the pathway to God invariably runs through humble Bethlehem. All the more reason to proclaim through word and deed that sacred space is still being met, yes, in the meeting of human needs. We may be tempted to leapfrog over the early weeks of Advent, going quickly to the manger scene, but that would be to miss the truth, that hope, that simple concept is the base, in fact, the bedrock for building peace, for celebrating joy, for expressing love, translating that need, not get bogged down in quibbling over sheep or skunks, nor should our telling be hindered by pointless discussions about Mary's conception occurred. The miracle is that God came down. Simple. All the way down to the messy stables of our lives. And so this morning, with hope, I offer this parable of snow that I wrote a long time ago when we were living in the jungle of New Guinea. In a green valley, sheltered by rugged mountains, there once lived a very contented people. Occasionally, travelers stopped and told stories about their journeys through the mountains. Oh, yes, the mountain paths are hard to walk, they said. Danger lurks behind every rock and under every slippery pebble. But the view, the incredible view, the joy of conquering the peaks and the snow, the unimaginable delight of snow. The people in the valley nodded and they listened. The mountain views, however, did not tempt them. Their own valley was full of beauty of its own kind. The thought of joy and conquest did not tempt them. There were games to be won on their own green fields. But the snow, they were curious about the snow. Where could you find it? Was snow hot or cold? What did it taste like? What was it good for? Where did it come from? The travelers did their best to answer their questions. Some said snow was everywhere. Some said it could be found in patches or under rocks. Some said snow was cold. Some said it could burn. Some said it was hard. Some said it was soft. None could describe what it tasted like. Each had his own ideas about it, what it was good for. The only thing they agreed on was that it fell from the sky. So the people of the valley were confused. Some said, snow does not exist. They're making up stories to lure us away from our lovely valley. And others said, well, it may exist, but who cares? We're happy here. But others wondered. Then those who wondered asked a traveler, who seemed older and wiser than the others, tell us, how can we find out about snow? Whether it really exists? And if it does, what is it really like? The traveler said simply, the only way for sure is to go and see for yourselves. But the mountains are high and the paths are dangerous, they said. What if we never find it? Everyone who searches in the mountains finds snow somewhere. Only those who live in the valley have never seen it. So some of the ones who wandered left the valley and started on their own journeys through the mountains, searching for snow. Some found it in little rocky corners. Some found it covering whole mountaintops. Some were burned by it. Some were frozen by it. Some found it hard enough to stand on. Some found it soft enough to lie in. None of them could describe what it tasted like. Each found different things that it was good for. And all agreed that when it came, it fell from the sky. But those who were afraid to chance the dangers of searching never left the valley. They spent the rest of their lives wondering. I offer you these words this first Sunday of Advent in the hope that they might help us prepare for the season that now finds us. Amen.